National Security This Week, a weekly look at American national security issues. And now, your host, John Olson.
Good morning, everyone. It's Wednesday, November 17th, and you've joined us for this week's edition of National Security This Week. I'm your host, John Olson. Every Wednesday at 9 a.m., we get together here on KYMN Radio to discuss national security issues. We're joined by guests from our local area, from around Minnesota, and from across the nation to help us explore challenges in national security. One of the things I've been able to do since I retired from the U.S. Navy has been to serve as a visiting lecturer, more commonly called an adjunct professor, at Carleton College, located here in Northfield, Minnesota. I teach courses on national security at Carleton in the Department of Political Science. That experience has been profoundly rewarding for me, both professionally and personally. Every time I teach a course, I'm blown away by the talent of the students at Carleton, who come from all across America and even from around the world. Today, we have a special show for you. I've invited three former students from Carleton College to join me to discuss the degree they earned in international relations and how that degree has propelled them into the career paths they're on today. Jonah Simons is a senior data analyst with Medtronic, where he supports programs in supply chain sustainability. He holds a master's degree in peace and conflict research from Uppsala University in Sweden, where he was a Rotary Peace Fellow, as well as a bachelor's degree from Carleton College in political science and international relations. Jonah has been recognized as a next-generation global leader by the U.S. Global Leadership Coalition, and he currently resides in Minneapolis. Nicole Nipper is a senior corporate security consultant focusing on intelligence and situational awareness for Target Corporation. She assists in crisis management and safety and security operations across the enterprise to help prepare for, respond to, and recover from any incident that impacts Target's people, guests, communities they operate in, and locations around the world. She holds a master's degree in the study of terrorism and political violence from the University of St. Andrews in Scotland, and a bachelor's degree from Carleton College in international relations. McKaylee Hunt hails from the Barossa Valley in South Australia, where she lived until moving to Minnesota to complete her undergraduate degree in political science and international relations at Carleton College. She is currently completing a master's in security policy studies at George Washington University in Washington, D.C., with an emphasis on transnational security. Outside of class, McKaylee interns for the Global Internet Forum to Counter Terrorism, or GIFCT, and with the Incident Location and Geospatial Intelligence Team at the National Consortium for the Study of Terrorism and Responses to Terrorism. Jonah Simons, Nicole Nipper, and McKaylee Hunt, welcome to National Security This Week.
Thanks, John. It's good to be here.
Yeah, thanks, John. Thanks, John.
So, Jonah, where are you at this morning?
This morning, I'm in Fridley, Minnesota, at Medtronic World Headquarters, which is where I work.
All right. And Nicole, where are you?
I'm currently in my home in Edina, Minnesota, working, but of course, working from home due to the pandemic.
Telecommuting. And McKaylee, how about you? Where are you at this morning?
I'm actually in DC. I'm also in my living room, but I will be going into work in person after this.
All right. So let's start at the beginning. And for all three of you, and McKaylee, you're the most recent graduate, so I'm going to start with you, and then we'll go to Nicole and then Jonah. What drew you to the study of international relations? What was it about that topic that interested you and made you decide to pursue that degree at Carleton College?
Yeah, so I think it's probably a bit cliche to say, but this kind of was always what I was going to do. I kind of grew up across two different countries, the US and Australia. I am a dual citizen. So I've kind of been representing both of those countries since I was born, traveling back and forth for as long as I can remember. So it just kind of always makes sense to pursue that. Wasn't really interested in math or science. That was my kind of twin brother's role. So easily jumped onto that. And my mom also worked in politics. She worked in DC, currently works in Washington State, and also did some local Australian politics, which is quite a different breed to US politics. And she also went to Carleton College and was so confident that I would go to Carleton that she actually booked the hotel for New Student Week before I was even accepted. So it was kind of made to be that this was career path and Carleton was where I studied.
And Nicole, how about you?
I have some similarities to McKaylee's story there. I've always been a resident in Minnesota for the most part, but primarily my drive to the international relations studies was the idea that there are so many complex problems around the world, and none of them have straightforward solutions. And most of these complex problems involve, you know, humans, which makes it even more complex. And I like the idea that international relations focuses on such a broad range of these complicated issues that affect so many people. Specifically, what's driven me to it was actually the study of terrorism, which is what I got my master's in. And the idea that studying these issues, you know, with the goal of preventing suffering, I think there's some pathway to from international relations to potentially finding solutions to mitigate suffering, and that's what drives me every day. And sometimes I think that's a little bit idealistic given the problems we face, but I do like to believe that there's a way to reduce suffering by studying international relations.
And Jonah, how about you?
Yeah, my story, or at least the story that I've constructed for myself, you know, really starts when I was 11, and my family moved to Sweden. I was, like Nicole, I grew up in Minnesota, but the year I spent in Sweden really sort of opened my eyes. I was just, you know, an 11-year-old plopped down in a new country and faced with a whole set of new questions that, you know, came alongside that. And I think that just sort of, yeah, it caused me to start thinking about the world differently and seeing myself and my place in the world a little bit differently. And I just remember in high school reading the international section of the New York Times. Those were the stories that really sort of caught my eye and that I found the most interesting. I didn't have a political legacy going to Carleton College or anything like that. But when I found myself accepted and when, you know, that was the college that I decided to go to, political science and international relations was already something that I was pretty keenly interested in studying.
Why don't we talk a little bit about the IR degree program at Carleton, maybe give our listeners an understanding of what that program is all about. What required, you know, the required courses, the core curriculum, what were those courses that you had to take? And then what were the electives that you took and why did you take them? And Jonah, we'll go ahead and start with you and then we'll go to Nicole and McKaylee.
Well, John, it's been a long time since I took those courses, but I can say at least the course that made the greatest impression on me, outside the one that I took with you, of course, was Comparative Political Regimes, taught by Professor Al Montero. And that was actually the very first political science course that I took. And for those who don't have degrees in international relations, comparative political regimes or comparative politics is just what it sounds like, comparing different countries, often using a computational approach. So this was my first introduction to sort of quantitative social science. And for me, when I was taking this course as an 18-year-old, it was the perfect marriage of my interest in statistics and my love of data science, as well as my interest in better understanding the world through the lens of international affairs.
Okay. And Nicole?
Yeah, I think I did a lot of my course selection somewhat backwards as far as the core courses for IR. I ended up taking those later in my undergraduate years and ended up taking a lot of the electives earlier. And then throughout my time there, I think majority of my courses actually at Carleton ended up being from the IR department. So I was pretty certain of my interests right away. Jonah and I actually were in the same course, and John, you were the professor for that course, the U.S. Intel Community. It was actually my first political science international relations elective. I think I was the only freshman in that class.
You were, I remember.
And I think that set the tone for my years after that. Most of the electives I took were pretty much focused on conflict, either from a very specific lens or more broadly speaking. I took several courses with Professor Dev Gupta, and I believe she was actually a guest on your show a little bit earlier this year.
She was, yeah.
That included courses like Northern Ireland and the Troubles, studying that, in addition to separatist movements. But I also took courses that had a crossover with international relations. So from the religion department or from the history department, that's one of the interesting things about international relations is that it is so broadly reaching that it crosses over with a lot of these other subjects. So I tended to enjoy my electives more than the core classes, and I don't think I'm alone in that. And I think it maybe says something that, you know, we can sometimes forget what those core courses were to begin with. So electives were certainly at the top of the list for me.
Yeah. And Michaeli, how about you?
Yeah, so I graduated last year, so I still remember the core courses. I did take them freshman year, which was a while ago. So basically I had to take democracy and dictatorship, and then I also had to take international relations and world politics, which I took with Greg Marfleet. And I do want to give Greg a shout out because I took six courses with him. He's responsible for like a sixth of my college education, so felt like I should give him a shout out there. And then my concentration was leadership, peace and security. So I took courses that kind of fit into that broad subtopic. I think my three favorite electives were probably Christina Farhat's misinformation, conspiracy theories, and political rumors course, which was incredibly relevant at the time and is also still very relevant right now. She did a really good job of kind of integrating current news and developments and conspiracy theories into our class. And I think that would be a really interesting one to take, obviously, with the pandemic and kind of the new conspiracies that are arising. I also took a really good course on feminist security studies, which was a really good chance to kind of expand beyond kind of the traditional state-centric theories of IR. And that course really helped shape the way I look at the international system today, and kind of I'm a little more critical of some of the other theories because of that course. And then one of my favorite courses, would be remiss not to mention your terrorism and counterterrorism course, John, which was one of my favorite ones I took at Carleton. I'm not just saying that so you keep writing me letters of recommendation. I did really enjoy it. I wanted to take a course taught by a practitioner and kind of get that inside knowledge. And yeah, it paid off.
So everybody usually in their senior year, occasionally we have people who are hard chargers and do their paper in their junior year, but all of you had to write a what they call a comps paper, sort of a senior year thesis paper. Nicole, let's start with you this time. What did you choose for your research project for your comps paper? How'd that paper come about, and what did you find as part of your research? This is an opportunity for all three of you to talk a little bit about the kind of research and time and effort you put into writing your individual comps papers. So we'll start with you, Nicole. We'll go to you, Jonah, second, and then Michaeli, let you finish up on this question.
Yeah, I personally really enjoyed the entire process. And I did do it during my junior year. I had the opportunity to do it that way. And I'm very happy it worked out that way. Made senior year a little bit more enjoyable. Not that this process wasn't enjoyable either, but I specifically focused on comparing worldviews and ideologies of ISIS and Al-Qaeda. And at the time, this would have been pretty early on still with ISIS emerging. And so there were a lot of discussions on whether there was a difference between the two groups. And it was very important to me to basically outline how they are different and what that means in terms of combating the groups, in addition to preventing additional groups and factions down the line. So what we can learn from differences between groups that seem similar, but are in fact very different. And the project emerged through one of my courses with Dev Gupta. It was actually a social movement theory course. Social movement theory is typically applied to more of the positive movements. So the civil rights movement and climate change, more of the Greenpeace movements. However, I saw a window to apply social movement theory to the study of political violence and terrorism. And I used those theories primarily to explain the differences between these two groups, using hundreds of documents from both groups and analyzing the words and language that they used to explain their motives. Ended up being a really fruitful project and took up a lot of time, but it was all time that I enjoyed. I still feel very passionate about it. So I'm grateful for that experience. And I think there is a lot of value in taking theories that maybe traditionally aren't used to explain some of these problems and look at them in different ways to come up with a number of different solutions.
Yeah. And Jonah, how about you? I know it's been a while since you wrote your comps paper. What did you work on?
It has been a while. And in preparation for this show, I went back and reviewed it. And I have to say, you know, there's some good content in there, but I've definitely grown as a social science researcher since I wrote it. But yeah, as far as what I wrote about, you know, in high school and during my time at Carleton, I was something of a Koreaphile. When I was reading the New York Times international section, you know, the stories that really caught my eye were always about North Korea. And so I came into Carleton, and we don't have a Korea studies department at Carleton, but I kind of made my own Korea studies major just in how I, you know, approached my coursework and what I chose to do research on. Because it was just the part of the world that I found the most interesting. And as I learned more about North Korea, I also realized, you know, I can't just learn about North Korea. There's a whole regional that, you know, to learn about there. So for my actual comps paper itself, I borrowed some psychological theories and used those to talk about how misperception and cognitive biases had contributed to the historical and ongoing failure of U.S. foreign policy towards North Korea. Nicole mentioned, you know, all of the electives that she took outside of the political science department. That's one of the, I think, in my opinion, one of the strengths of a political science or an international relations degree is that you're really taking from so many different fields of social science and incorporating all of those into your understanding of how the world works. So for me, yeah, it was cognitive psychology that I was looking at, and one of the most interesting things I learned, for instance, was just the linguistic barriers of communicating with North Korea. That, for instance, when the U.S. sends an envoy to North Korea and there's a dialogue, the translators that we use on the U.S. side are almost certainly have been, you know, trained, or they're from South Korea, but in the now more than 70 years that North Korea and South Korea have been divided, the languages have started to diverge pretty significantly. In South Korea, there are a bunch of, for instance, a bunch of loan words that have been taken from English. So like the South Korean word for computer is just it's just computer. Like it's the English word that they've adopted. And for ideological, political reasons, North Koreans don't use that word. And so there are, even just in the way that we communicate with one another, there are these barriers that have cropped up, and there are specific instances where that's led to political crises and diplomatic failures. So that was what I looked at, and it was pretty interesting.
And Michaeli, how about you? What was your comps paper on?
Yeah, so I looked at the nonviolent strategies of terrorist organizations. So I wrote a research paper for your terrorism and counterterrorism class, which I decided to use as the basis of my kind of comps paper. So there were kind of two main arguments or concepts that I kind of drew on. One, we were talking about this idea of propaganda of the deed in class, which is basically the idea that actions speak louder than words and our actions can be used as a form of propaganda. So when we're talking about it in relation to terrorism, there's kind of this inherent equation of the deed with a violent deed. And so that is kind of how the concept has come to be defined and seen. And then you had also mentioned in class one day that ISIS had a garbage disposal system, which is a quote I have mentioned in many job interviews and cover letters, and how that kind of sparked my interest in terrorism. But it really did make me stop and go, well, how am I thinking of terrorism and terrorists? And I kind of took those two ideas and said, well, can we consider a deed that is nonviolent, and can we look at a form of propaganda where terrorist organizations are using nonviolent deeds? So I looked at service provision specifically and kind of placed that into some of the frameworks of violent strategies of terrorism. So demonstrated that a nonviolent strategy would function as a form of outbidding, where terrorist organizations would use inclusive service provision to demonstrate they were capable of governing and being a legitimate alternative to whichever government they were in conflict with. And then I took case studies of ISIS and Hezbollah and showed when inclusive versus exclusive service provision would be used to get a kind of symbolic versus a material benefit as well.
All right. So for our audience, you're listening to KYMN Radio, AM 1080 and FM 95.1. This is National Security This Week, and I'm your host, John Olson. Our guests today are three former students of mine, Jonah Simons, Nicole Nipper, and McKaylee Hunt, and we're discussing how their study of international relations has impacted their respective careers. So that said, Jonah, let's start with you. You graduated, I think, in the spring of 2014. Briefly, tell us what you've been up to since then.
Briefly? Well, after I graduated, you know, I just talked about how I was interested in the Korean Peninsula, but I had never been there. So I sort of made it my goal to you know, spend some time there. And I worked as an English teacher in South Korea in three different rural elementary schools for a year, which was a great experience. And then at the completion of that contract, I moved back to Minnesota, and I worked first as a paralegal in an immigration law firm, and then as a teaching assistant at Friends School of Minnesota in St. Paul. And I was just kind of trying to, you know, I was trying a few different things out, trying to figure out which direction I wanted to move in my career. And it was around then that I decided I probably, you know, wanted to go back to grad school. And I applied for this Rotary Peace Fellowship, which is a really amazing educational opportunity made possible by Rotary International. But I applied for this fellowship with no expectation that I was actually going to receive it. And then after I had applied for that, I applied to work at Medtronic as a trade analyst. And I was hired at Medtronic, and I started working here. And I was here for about 3 months, really enjoying myself, when I found out I had been selected for the Rotary Peace Fellowship. So I guess, you know, when it rains, it pours. And it was a tough choice for me to make at the time, but the, you know, the offer to go do grad school studying peace and conflict research at Uppsala University in Sweden and to get paid for that eventually won out. So that's what I did from the fall of 2019 until the spring of this year. I was in Uppsala University. It was obviously, you know, that experience was impacted by the COVID-19 pandemic. But about halfway through my master's program, I also started working as a consultant with the United Nations Economic and Social Commission for Asia and Pacific, doing statistics and social science research for them. And then I graduated from my master's program in June of this year. And now I'm working back at Medtronic, and I'm working as a senior data analyst in supplier sustainability. So yeah, that's all I've done since 2014.
And that supplier sustainability, we had talked about that, I don't know, a month ago or so. What exactly are you focusing on?
Yeah, so I mean, within Medtronic, you know, we have billions of dollars that we spend in our supply chain, and the company is prioritizing sustainability moving forward, which encompasses both environmental sustainability, but also concepts like labor and human rights, making sure that people have are receiving adequate pay, that they're not engaged in modern day slavery, as well as a separate conflict minerals program. And so that all sort of falls under the umbrella of responsible supplier management, which I think, you know, actually more broadly falls under the umbrella of corporate responsibility, corporate social responsibility. So that's really what I'm doing. And I'm doing more of the, yeah, the data analysis work for them here.
So that's like rare earth minerals and whatnot, metals, things of that nature.
Yeah. There's an acronym. It's 3TG, which is tin, tantalum, tungsten, and gold are the conflict minerals. And that's specified under the Dodd-Frank Act, that there is a compliance requirement that you have to disclose the sourcing of those three minerals if they're used in your products, which they are for Medtronic, which for those who don't know, Medtronic is a medical device manufacturer. So we're looking within our supply chain at the sources of those different minerals, the smelters that are being used, and making sure that that we're disclosing, but also trying to move away from some of those high risk smelters.
Okay, and Nicole, how about you? You graduated in spring of 2017. What have you been doing the last few years?
Yeah, right after graduating from Carleton, I ended up jumping the ocean and going right to Scotland and pursuing my master's degree there in St. Andrews at the Center for the Study of Terrorism and Political Violence at the university there. And even during that time, I think my views of what I was studying tended to broaden and become a lot more intersectional with issues beyond just terrorism. So even though this master's program was pretty specific, there were a lot of opportunities to explore conflicts involving genocide. And at the time, it would have also involved me looking at concerns in the US over mass shootings and the full range of political violence that involves individual acts to organized group acts. So that kind of changed the way I was looking at some of these conflicts and how I could make a difference with the degrees that I had. And once I finished up my master's program there, I came home and started to look for a pathway forward in terms of my career, and decided not to go towards the public sector and instead found a pathway in the private sector. Joined Target and their corporate security team. And I think this is something that doesn't often get highlighted because it is such an interesting aspect of corporations now, that so many have intelligence functions, they have corporate security functions, and how that's been changing over the years. And more companies are growing out those teams to address the growing conflicts with supply chain and international trade and the whole range of potential issues that impact corporate operations. And so I've been with Target for about 3 years now, primarily addressing any type of crisis ranging from workplace violence to natural disasters. So we're impacted by not just the human disasters, but also the natural ones as well, making climate change a growing concern, in addition to the supply chain complications that we're facing both domestically and internationally. My position here has given me a first look at a lot of the conflicts we're going to be facing in the coming years, And I think one example of this would be the winter storm event in Texas that basically decimated part of the power grid. It was something that I think a lot of corporations and public sector teams weren't really expecting. And realizing that some of our infrastructure can be that fragile, particularly when it comes to natural disasters, is a top concern, I think, not just for corporate America, but for the country as a whole as a national security concern. So being a part of that initiative, seeing how wildfire season basically doesn't end now for the U.S., this impacts, you know, our food security. And, you know, Target plays a key role in that as well. And making sure that when teams are shopping or guests are shopping, that they're going to be safe in our buildings, or the communities we operate in are going to be safe. So I think it's growing for corporations to not just care about their people and their buildings and their assets, but to also care about the communities we operate in. And that's one of the things that I value the most in my position currently with Target is, you know, even if we're not impacted by a natural disaster, we're going to care about the communities that are, and doesn't necessarily have to have a direct line to our operations for us to reach out and want to make a difference. And that's been my goal from the get-go.
Okay. And McKaylee, how about you?
Yeah, I have not been out of school for quite as long as Jonah and Nicole, but I graduated during the pandemic, so June last year. And I'd kind of always known that grad school was on the horizon. It was something that I was going to do. And so I decided to use the pandemic as a chance to really just knuckle down and work nonstop to get ready for grad school. So that is what I did. I didn't work less than 60, 70 hours a week, two or three jobs at a time to kind of make sure that I was getting kind of the good experience for my resume and also saving money. So I've probably worked enough jobs to last a decade. When I immediately graduated, I was doing a full-time AmeriCorps program, helping with coaching across America. And I kind of managed 22 other vistas who were serving at host sites where they were doing trauma-informed coaching for youth athletes in kind of communities in need. And while I was doing that, I was also doing virtual programming for a summer camp, so running lots of Zoom sessions with kids who were missing out on kind of those in-person interactions. And I was also nannying 30 weeks for a nanny family, which was predictably quite a hectic summer. I then transitioned to becoming a field organizer for the 2020 election, which was even more hectic and busy. I kind of did that from the comfort of my bedroom with my little desk that I would pull across every single morning when I started. So that was pretty exciting. Obviously, the 2020 election was very chaotic, I will say, in a word. So that was good. And then from there, I transitioned to interning for the Carter Center's Syria Conflict Mapping Program. So I was doing a lot of kind of coding for them, a lot of building out their natural language processing tool, which was really interesting, getting to do some kind of OSINT work, mapping Turkish-Russian patrol routes in Aleppo and Hasaka governorates, which is fun. I was also still nannying during that time, and I also started working at a doggy daycare on the weekends at that time. So that was kind of a 7 day a week situation. And then in the summer, I transitioned back to that AmeriCorps program I'd done when I'd first graduated. Was nannying for three nanny families this summer, still at the doggy daycare. So that was probably the most chaotic time. And then the Carter Center pulled me back on as a contractor during the month of August. And then I started grad school full time and am interning 30 hours a week now, as John mentioned at the start, for two different places. So honestly, grad school seems pretty easy after kind of all of the stuff I went through to get here. But I am really enjoying my internship with the Global Internet Forum to Counter Terrorism. They're really working with tech companies across the tech stack to counter the use and exploitation of the internet by terrorists. So at the moment, I'm kind of helping them turn their human rights impact assessment into kind of some tangible policies and outputs, which has been really interesting.
You know, I was really concerned when I brought you guys on here that you'd be all, you know, real underachievers, but I'm pleasantly surprised by all the things you've been able to accomplish in the last few years.
Kaylee, have you slept since you graduated from Carleton?
Actually, I always prioritize sleep, so I never, even in undergrad, I will not do all-nighters. I don't normally do homework after dinner, so my mom and my sister kept being like, you can take a break, like, you can stop working, and I was like, no. I could stop working when I'm in grad school, but here I am, still working.
All right, so for our audience, you're listening to KYMN Radio, AM 1080 and FM 95.1. This is National Security This Week, and I'm your host, John Olson. Our guests today are three former students of mine, Jonah Simons, Nicole Nipper, and McKaylee Hunt, and we're discussing how their study of international relations has impacted their respective careers. So for all three of you, how did the international relations degree program at Carleton College prepare you for the career paths that you find yourself on today? McKaylee, why don't we start with you and then Jonah and Nicole?
Yeah, so I, because of that terrorism and counterterrorism course that I took with you, that's kind of put me directly on the career path that I am on at the moment. I am interning at two kind of terrorism and extremism related organizations. So there is a pretty direct connection between the courses I took and kind of my interests now. I do think Carleton did a really, really, really good job of preparing me to work in the sense that I can kind of think outside of the box. I think a lot of the times people in my grad program complain about how hard it is, but honestly, I would say it's equivalent, if not easier, to Carleton, because if you weren't in the library, you know, for 8-hour days on the weekend at Carleton, you weren't getting your readings done, you weren't getting your homework done. So I think Carleton did a really good job of kind of building up really high expectations so that I am able to meet kind of any tasks, time management skills that kind of come my way in jobs.
And Jonah?
Yeah, I want to echo what McKaylee just said. I think Carleton does a great job of preparing you for certainly for grad school. And as far as the IR degree program specifically, I mean, I think the thread of the IR program runs through pretty much everything that I've done. You know, I've lived in four different countries in the past 10 years. And, you know, that's what you're studying, you know, there's the academic work that you're doing, but, you know, what you're learning about is preparing you to experience life anywhere in the world, giving you cultural competency. You know, I think people with IR degrees tend to travel pretty well. And you know, specifically what it's done for me professionally, I can say that my first job at Medtronic, which again, you know, I worked here, went to grad school, and now I'm back because I enjoyed it so much. But my first job as a trade analyst, I was hired in part because my manager, who was the hiring manager, saw that I had an IR degree. And he said, I want to hire people who have international relations degrees because they have an understanding of what's going on in the world. You know, when things are happening quickly in the world of, you know, of international trade, back in 2018, when I was hired, there was a lot going on. You know, it can change on a dime. And my boss wanted somebody who was able to read what had happened at 7 a.m. and come into work at 8 a.m. and know what was up. So yeah, I think that's, you know, that's what you're getting from an IR degree in addition to, you know, all of the other, you know, opportunities and experiences.
And Nicole, how about you? How did the IR degree program at Carleton College set you up for the career path you're on today?
I would echo the echo of McKaylee and Jonah there. You both really nailed it. I think specifically an IR degree at a liberal arts college gives you the opportunity to explore so many different areas. of what you're studying. And like Michaela said, think outside the box. I've also encountered in my professional career, people saying that it is a benefit to see international relations majors and that experience there, like Jonah was mentioning. It gives you this broad perspective. And it also, I think, symbolizes you know, a sense of curiosity. People who have an international relations degree tend to have pretty nuanced views of conflicts and parts of the world that keeps the door open for discussion, in addition to you know, problem solving strategies that other people might not be thinking of. So for me, it's definitely impacted how I decided where to go for my master's. And like Michaela said, it made the, I think grad school is, you know, if it doesn't feel quite like a jump when you come from Carleton. I think I felt very prepared going to my grad program and kind of just felt like continuation of what I was doing. So I could really go into things that I was interested in. And then for the professional side of it, like Jonah was mentioning, it really is one of those things where I tend to find myself thinking back to courses that I had taken or lessons that I had learned at Carleton, even in daily operations in my job today. So thinking about problem solving from foundations that I learned back in undergrad.
All right, so let's put your degrees to work, and we'll have a little bit more of a discussion here. We're closing in on the bottom quarter of the hour. For each of you, and we'll start us off, Nicole, you start the discussion here. What do you think are the top three biggest challenges that America faces today? And you get 3 minutes.
All right. I think, well, first, I struggled to narrow down the challenges that I am conceptualizing. I struggled to narrow them down to three. I think there's no shortage of crises or challenges facing the U.S. Today. For me, my top three, I suppose I'd simply put it as climate change is certainly a top concern and a top threat. And it's not something that's as far off as I think we would like to think that it is. It's already here. And I know that discussions have been increasing in the past few months, particularly with the COP26 right now. Along with that, I'd probably say threats to infrastructure, both from natural disasters, but also from more of malicious causes. So cyber attacks and those types of things, and threatening electrical grids and so forth. And then I'll throw out this other one. I'm not sure that we usually think of it as a top security risk, but I would say public health, broadly speaking. And that goes beyond just the pandemic. In fact, I would say it was a top concern before a pandemic. Particularly, I want to call out the national crisis that we have right now with mental health and how that can cascade throughout so many different sectors. And that also includes equity concerns. So there's plenty of an intersectionality between all these challenges and more, but I'll keep it to those three categories.
Okay. And Michaela, how about you? What do you see are the three top challenges that we face today?
Yeah, I think I definitely echo climate change. I think that so many of the other kind of national security challenges that we would kind of consider will be exacerbated by climate change or kind of directly related to climate change. Sorry, I also want to mention domestic polarization and then kind of at the extreme end of that, radicalization. I think in the last 4 years, we saw an increase in kind of this us versus them rhetoric and these kinds of misinformation campaigns that are really dividing the US into kind of two camps. I think it's really interesting taking courses on kind of ethnic conflict and civil wars and just kind of seeing the early stages of these kind of historical conflicts kind of mapping onto current US domestic politics. And obviously not saying that we are at that level quite yet, but I do think that this polarization is kind of something to be wary of and kind of keep in mind, especially as we are seeing a lot more Gray Zone Warfare, which I think would probably be my third kind of biggest challenge, just in terms of misinformation campaigns that are being conducted, and those kind of play into that public health crisis with the pandemic and kind of misinformation that is being spread by hostile actors to kind of increase the chaos of the domestic political environment for the US.
And Jonah, how about you?
Yeah, I again, climate change has to be, I think, at the top of anyone's list right now in terms of national security threats, or just threats to society, our way of life, economy, everything, you name it. And yeah, and as far as national security goes, I think Michaela hit the nail on the head that it's can be a catalyst for so many other cascading problems. And then the other two that I want to shout out, one is the proliferation of drone technology, which is, I think, starting to get a lot of traction. But as far as, conventional warfare, I think you're starting to see that the U.S. is losing its competitive edge that it's held for the past few decades, with using drone technology. But also, in terms of non-state conflict, I watched a documentary recently about cartels in Mexico that are using drones that they're buying off the shelf to monitor the movement of national police. They're using them as instruments of terrorism, and they're innovating basically with the technology that's available to them, again, just right off the shelf. So I think, looking forward to the future, yeah, the intersection of drone technology and things like facial recognition to me is pretty frightening. It sounds sci-fi, but it's all there with the technology that we already have today. And then the last thing is our sourcing of rare earth elements, which ties into the work that I do here at Medtronic. Here it's mostly about environmental, social, and corporate governance. But as far as national security goes, I think you would be shocked to learn how reliant we are on these rare earth elements and how fragile those supply chains are. And it comes down to the way we produce microchips. What's in? I read a book in preparation for this job called Elements of Power, which I highly recommend. And I learned in that book that half of all known elements in the periodic table are in an iPhone. So, that just goes to show it's not even, advanced military technology. It's the technology that we all rely on to keep our calendars to navigate to work. That really our society is built on the foundation of these rare earth elements. And we, as a, I would say, again, as a society, I think we're pretty passé about where we're sourcing those from, and yeah, the risks to their future viability.
So unfortunately, we only have about 9 minutes left. I have two more questions I want to ask you. One, I'll let you give me a little more detailed answer on. The last one, you have to be brief. So let's finish with these last two questions. The first one is, if you were to sit down today with high school students or even freshmen in college who had not yet selected their degree, what advice would you give them regarding studying international relations? How important is it for students to get engaged in this field, considering the challenges America faces around the world? And I'll throw it out there. Who wants to go first? Okay, go ahead, Jonah.
I just want to take note of the way that you're framing this question, John, and it's very characteristic that it's about service to country. I want to frame it in a slightly different way,
Okay.
that I think, an IR degree is just great training for any number of careers, as evidenced by my own story. I've worn a lot of hats in the now more than 7 years since I graduated from Carleton. It just gives you a knowledge of how the world works. It trains you to think about complex cross-national issues. And I think almost, most more importantly than anything else, it forces you to develop your own system of beliefs and be able to stand by those beliefs. I think it's a win-win both for young people who are thinking about their future, and then also for the country as a whole, because we need people with those skill sets.
Okay, and Nicole, how about you?
I'm going to blend together John's framing and Jonah's framing here. I think because of what Jonah said, there's this idea that we can think beyond ourselves with an IR degree. I think that is part of the service element here is, we can become so consumed with what's going on in our own lives and what's going on in our own pursuits that we can sometimes overshadow the communities we live in. And the communities we live in are just as important in as the international communities we're studying as well. They're all connected. So being able to see a connection between what we're studying from this broad level of international relations and applying it to the world that we operate in kind of locally, you can really make a difference. And that whole realm of curiosity about the world and about people is what's going to make change go from the grassroots level to the national and international levels.
And Michaeli, how about you?
Yeah, I think I would kind of echo some similar points. I think it definitely is important for everyone to at least take a couple courses related to IR and politics in general. I know that when I came to Carlton, I was just a little country girl from Australia. I hadn't really thought a lot about how the world worked, kind of focused on my school and working back in Australia. So I think taking those courses, and I took a lot of them at Carlton, really did broaden my worldview and kind of helped me see those connections, as Nicole talked about, kind of the global and local connections, and see myself as kind of part of a broader community. I also just really liked the theories because I love understanding how things work. So I think for people who are kind of more creative, there's things you can learn that'll be relevant for your kind of roles. And for people who are more math and science, if you like how things work, well, we've got theories for that. They might not always work out, but they work out some of the time. So I think it's definitely important for everyone to take those courses. And then, yeah, I think America's facing a lot of challenges, but I think a lot of the challenges are global that we are facing now, climate change and insecurity. So I think everyone, even little Australians, should also get involved with IR.
All right, so I'll let you continue on, Michaeli, and with this last question, and I'll just say to Jonah and Nicole, if you would rather decline to answer this question, considering your current positions, I completely and totally understand. Michaeli, what is it you have planned for your near future, for your career? What is it you hope to achieve in the near term? And we'll see if Nicole or Jonah want to put themselves on report with their respective companies regarding what they really want to accomplish with their lives. Go ahead, Michaeli.
I don't know if you remember at the start of the pandemic, we had maybe an hour, 2 hour long Zoom chat where I said, I don't know what I want to do with my life. So this is not the best kind of question for me, but I definitely want to finish my grad program, which is slated for, I think, June 2023. I'm going to be continuing my internship with GiftCT into the spring, which is really exciting. So I can kind of work on the projects that I'm working on now and kind of extend them. And then in terms of specific jobs, I don't have a specific job. I think I've been really lucky to kind of build a pathway kind of organically. Things kind of keep just falling into my lap in a way. So I think that's kind of what I'm hoping for at the moment. I do need to work out if I'm gonna live in Australia or the US, but that's a problem for the me in 2 years' time.
Yeah. And Nicole, how about you? Maybe it's moving up in the chain at Target. What are you interested in doing?
Well, I should say too that everything that I say is my opinion and not the opinion of my
Sure. Yeah.
company.
Of course. Of course.
However, I think every opportunity that I've come across is an opportunity to learn and to you not only just clarify my own values, but to work to become more and more aligned with my own values in my daily life. So I want to continue to find ways to improve the community around me and work to solve some of these complex problems, even though I do believe that it's a little bit idealistic to believe that I can solve some of these major problems. I think you can chip away at them. So, you know, whether that means I stay with Target forever or move on, whatever I do, I want to make sure that I'm working to make the world a better place, for lack of a better cliche.
Never apologize for being an idealist. Gives you the courage to drive forward every single day. And you, Jonah, what do you have planned?
Yeah, I just started in this role, so I'm looking forward to having a little bit of stability in my life and staying here for the foreseeable future. But I'm excited to be part of what Medtronic is doing. And, you know, I think that the ESG, environmental, social, and corporate governance area, I think that's going to be a really important part of solving some of society's most important challenges in the near future. It's not something that I foresaw myself doing while I was at Carleton, but I'm pretty excited about it now that I'm here. And, but you know, of course, if this doesn't work out, I'll just pursue my dream of being an Instagram influencer.
Okay, fair enough. So for both of you, Jonah and Nicole, you're at Medtronic and Target. You should probably know that the Business Roundtable, which is you know, basically the heads of some of the major companies in America and the world, have been talking a lot lately about the role of what corporations should do. Do they just exist to create value for shareholders, or do they exist for other purposes too, like to benefit their communities, to contribute back to society? And sort of the going understanding across corporate America today, led by some of our giants in the multinational world, is that corporations need to do more than just create value for shareholders. So you're both with really good companies that care deeply about these issues, and the fact that you have an IR degree is probably contributing heavily to the success of your career paths in those two companies. So, folks, we've come to the end of another edition of National Security This Week. McKaylee Hunt, Nicole Nipper, and Jonah Simons, thank you so much for joining us today and telling us about your respective career paths. I guess you guys, I should let you go so you can get back to work or back to school, but thank you again for joining me today.
Thank you, John.
Hey, John.
Yeah, thanks, John. It was great talking with you.
And, folks, that closes this week's edition of National Security This Week. We're on KYMN Radio, AM 1080 and FM 95.1. I'm your host, John Olson. Thank you for joining me today. I look forward to sharing time with you again next Wednesday morning at 9 a.m. Take care, everybody, and have a great week.
You've been listening to National Security This Week, a weekly show looking into issues of American national security with the host, John Olson. Listen every Wednesday at 9 a.m. for National Security This Week.